Against Her Nature, written by Elizabeth Buchan and read by Stella Gonne.
Prologue. Perhaps it was something to do with their height. Tall women are treated differently from their small sisters. Being tall means that you must work hard to blend. Perhaps it was their differences. One from a gentle, unthreatened upbringing in Hampshire, the other from the tough outreaches of a council flat in Streatham. And they recognised in each other the polarity essential to balance. Perhaps it was the era, which promised that all things were possible. It was not so surprising that a girl nurtured in the city's anarchy should be drawn to one to whom it had always been suggested that the world was ordered for her comfort. They were not to know that a decade of excess was closing, and with the arrival of the modern imperialists and pirates blowing in from Europe and the unleashing of natural disasters, that a furious battle would be waged between the ghosts of the past and the spectres of the future. In the bitter clash would die the belief that we had wrapped up life with antibiotics, insurance, and social security. Whatever. The two girls met at a reception given by Women in the City, the WIC, a new and of necessity rather poorly subscribed association. For 10 seconds or so, they scrutinised each other. Long seconds. Instantly, and to her immense surprise, a love both deep and loyal, destined to outlive feelings for lovers, perhaps husbands, trembled on the edges of Becky Vitali's uninhabited and sceptical heart, but drove a spear through Tess France. And that was that. "Let me draw sustenance from life," wrote Tess in her childish 5-year diary. "I must not fail." Chapter 1. It is written somewhere that if a butterfly flaps its wings, a delicate flash of orange, blue or white, over the grasses of an English meadow, the result can be an earthquake in China. Such are the connections between events that are, to begin with, considered random. The first letter arrived on the 25th of June 1987, the day of the France annual cocktail party. Like most letters, it looked innocuous, in a rectangular white envelope with a typed address. "I am writing to inform you," it said, "that the Quattro Marine Syndicate, 317/634, will produce a substantial loss in respect of the 1985 underwriting account. You will see from the enclosed letter, which Mr. Quattro has sent to his direct names, that the overall loss is approximately 200% of allocated premium income. A schedule summarising your underwriting position as of the 31st of December 1987 is enclosed, from which you will note that your cash call will be approximately £6,400. Colonel Frant read it in the privacy of his study at the High House. Conscious that his heartbeat had raised a little, he frowned, laid the letter to one side and rejoined his family in the kitchen. Of its contents, he said nothing. Summer had applied its colours over the shires, and the day was filled with bright hot sun and with the sound of skylarks swooping over the crops in the fields that lapped the village of Appleford. By 6:30 the heat had distilled and rested heavily over the land. Clearly the sun was going to take its time to set. As this was England, the topic of the weather was on everyone's lips. Mrs. Frant moved, or rather sailed, through the drawing room and the coveys of guests. Recognising a superior might, steam victorious over wind power, as it were, they gave way, and many followed in little dribs into the dry, manicured garden. From time to time, her snorting, slightly anarchic laugh, so at variance with her appearance, could be heard above the murmur of conversation. "Marjorie, my dear," she said, halting beside two women on the York stone patio and kissing the powdered cheek that had been proffered. "How lovely!"